fight really isn't about chips. It's really a deeper thing. And mm-hmm. so when I look at that as a parent, I might want to come in and referee that and be like, okay, here's what we're doing with chips, right? Probably my own reactivity. I'm like, there will be no chips in our house forever. But that's not going to solve it.
You've lost chip privilege. Yeah.
I know. We've lost chip privileges. Except I like chips. So this is about – I hate when the consequence is a punishment for me. So, okay, that's off the table. I love it. But yeah, so – to that end, it's like I have to look a little bit deeper and say, okay, but what is the need? Like, what is the issue that's really hard? And then mm-hmm. break that down with my kids and talk mm-hmm. through that.
Hi there. We are the Childhood Collective, and we have helped thousands of overwhelmed parents find joy and confidence in raising their child with ADHD. I'm Katie, a speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Lori.
And I'm Mallory, and we're both child psychologists.
As busy mamas ourselves, we are on a mission to support ADHD parents on this beautiful and chaotic parenting journey.
If you are looking for honest ADHD parenting stories, a dose of empathy with a side of humor, and practical tools, you are in the right place. Let's help your family shine with ADHD.
Hello, and welcome back to the Shining with ADHD podcast. Today, I'm here with Mallory, and we're talking all about siblings and what we can do as parents to support our kids when they are in conflict with each other. And we're actually so excited to be talking about this today because both Mallory and I happen to have kids who never fight and are always kind to each other. Right, Mal?
Yeah. So, you know, we know exactly what to do to mm-hmm. clear this issue up 100%. Okay. There's a little bit of sarcasm there.
Just a little bit. And that's fair, right? So actually, you know, sibling conflict is something that we both experience in our own homes, as I'm sure most of you do too. And the truth is, like, my kids can honestly go from being mortal enemies to being best friends and then back to being mortal enemies in a matter of seconds. It's honestly pretty impressive. Yeah, and I know too. That for – okay, so this is good. We're all in this boat together with kids who fight, right? And and we're going to get into this more, but there is some level of sibling conflict that's normal, and we actually – kids are gaining a lot of skills that way. But for me as a parent, honestly, arguing can be really triggering for me. I get really overwhelmed by noise, and I think I probably tend to catastrophize things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're fighting. They're going to hate each other forever. And so I know for me, my default mode is to just basically try to shut down any argument the second that it starts. And mm-hmm. we're going to talk about this today, but that's probably not the best approach.
Yeah. And I kind of have the same gut reaction of mm-hmm. like, fix this, turn this off. I'm uncomfortable. I want this to stop happening. What do I have to do to like get from A to Z as quickly as possible? And I think there's a lot of parents who can probably relate to that. And sibling conflict is hard in any family. But when you have one or more kids that has ADHD, we know that that conflict can feel even more overwhelming. So if you're listening to this episode and you're wondering if this is going to apply to you, maybe, you know, is this going to apply to me if I have just one child with ADHD, or if I, if the other kids don't have ADHD themselves, or will these strategies work if everyone in my family has ADHD? Mm-hmm. The short answer here is yes. We're talking to all of you. We're speaking to all of you here. The tools that we're going to talk about today will hopefully be ideas that any of you can apply with all of your kids, regardless of diagnosis.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, like I mentioned, sibling conflict is a normal part of childhood, right? Like, I look back growing up in a family with three kids, it always felt like there was two versus one. But in our house, the two changed over time. So it was like, it wasn't always the same two versus the same one, if that makes sense. We were always kind of shifting sides, you know. But when we have that sibling conflict, it's actually one of the ways that our kids are learning to manage their frustration. You know, they're learning how to repair after a fight. How do I say sorry? How do I forgive someone for something that they did? And what is it like to really actually live with another person who surprisingly doesn't act like you or think like you all the time? Like, mm-hmm. these are skills that we all need. We use these skills in the workplace. We use these skills in our own relationships as adults. And the sibling conflict can be kind of a basis for that. So it's mm-hmm. kind of about, how do we make it as healthy as possible? You know, and how do we as parents support that?
Yeah. And like you said, Katie, the goal here isn't zero conflict. Kids are still going to fight. Your kids are still going to disagree. There's going to be sibling conflict. But like you said, the goal is to help them learn how to navigate this conflict in a healthier way, especially when your family has ADHD in the mix somehow, whether one or more kids have ADHD, whether you, whether a partner has ADHD. How do we handle this in a way that is healthy and is building skills for our kids? And I just want to add one more piece too. Normal sibling conflict is one thing, but if things in your home are becoming physically unsafe, emotionally very harmful, one of your kids seems fearful of another, we really want to urge you, that's a sign to seek some extra support, you know, beyond this podcast episode. If your family is dealing with that intense aggression or this ongoing conflict that's creating a lot of hostility in your home, maybe fear in your home, we highly recommend you seek out professional support.
Yeah. And don't be embarrassed by that. I think there is this fear of, as parents, of talking with a professional and really sharing, like, it's actually really, really tough. But professionals are used to hearing this. They're used to seeing it. They have a totally different perspective than we do as parents. And so definitely, like Mal said, just we want to encourage you, if there is a safety concern, that's such an important piece. And don't be embarrassed or afraid to get the help that you need. Okay, so before we jump in, we always want to ask you if you could just take a quick moment and leave us a 5-star review for our podcast, or share this episode with a friend, or share it on social media. That truly means the world to us. We are in growth mode on the podcast, and we're just growing. And the more families that we can reach, the better, and the more we can continue to create this kind of content. So if you could share and like and review, that would be amazing.
All right, so let's dive into this. Today we have 3 strategies to help reduce conflict and sibling arguing in families. So our first tip, and oh my gosh, my kids are probably so annoyed of me. I'm a broken record when it comes to stop trying to make everything equal. And what I tell my kids all the time is equal is not the same as fair. Fair is not the same as equal, because let me tell you, my boys feel like everything needs to be equal all the time. And this is the root of a lot of disagreements in my home. And especially when you're raising kids with ADHD or neurodivergent kids in general, everyone has different needs. Kids need different things at different times. And what one child gets, another child doesn't necessarily need. So instead of focusing on making things perfectly equal all the time, we focus on people getting what they need, and that's what's fair. So for example, let's talk about homework time. One of your kids might prefer to do their homework while they're standing and kind of moving around, while another child wants a quiet room. Okay, these are not equal scenarios, but everyone's getting what they need. One child's being given the opportunity to kind of move around while they do their homework. Maybe they like to listen to music. And then we're figuring out a way to help the other child get that peace and quiet that they need while they do homework. These things are not equal, but they're fair, because our kids are getting what they need.
Yeah, it's interesting. In my family, one that's coming up lately is the idea of bedtimes. And so I have a 12-year-old who is definitely a night owl. And I will preface this by saying I'm not a night owl. Okay, what am I? I'm like a lark or something. I'm up early. But my 12-year-old, you know, she hits her stride at 9 p.m. And that's when we've been trying to put her to bed. And she wants to sleep in, you know, over summer break, especially. She's like, don't talk to me until at least 9 o'clock. And some days are more flexible and that can work. Other days I'm like, nope, we're all up and out the door. But with my younger one, he's 9 and he needs to go to bed by even maybe like 7:30, 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock for him is, you know, lights are out. Mm-hmm. And this has become an issue for us, because if for me to say everyone goes to bed at this exact time, let's say 8 or 8:30, if you split the difference, I would have one kid who's not getting enough sleep and is, you know, needs to go to bed earlier, and then struggles once you get past that sleep window, he's going to struggle to fall asleep. And then I'd have one kid who's like literally climbing the walls. And so we've had to really figure this out, because for us in the beginning of parenting, it was pretty much the same. Everyone had the same bedtime. Everyone woke up at the same time. But especially as you hit those tween years, your needs literally change. And so we're not perfect at it, but we're figuring out how do we support a tween, almost teenager, mm-hmm. in getting the right amount of sleep. And that is not going to be the exact same schedule as a 9-year-old who mm-hmm. struggles. So that's another just real life example.
Yeah, I can imagine this is a problem in some families, kind of the root of some sibling arguments, where if there's like more of an age gap between siblings too, yes. where it makes sense for a high schooler, you know, there's different sleep needs. And mm-hmm. so one child's going to bed a lot earlier than another. That can kind of be the root of the sibling argument, the sibling struggle. But again, everyone gets what they need biologically. Mm-hmm. some yeah. kids need more sleep. Some kids need an earlier bedtime. I'm lucky that my kids, they both wake up at 5 a.m. It's great. I'm super lucky.
So lucky, Mal.
So lucky, but they get the same bedtime. So at least I have that.
Yeah, and they're close in age too. Yeah. And I'm curious to see when your older one does hit the tween years, mm-hmm. if it does change. Because I was yeah. the same. My kids were such early risers, and mm-hmm. which honestly I didn't hate. My husband is definitely the night owl. So it's been, you know, basically everyone has had some sort of a sleep issue since mm-hmm. we started having kids 12 years ago. To be determined on whether that resolves soon here, I don't know. But I think the main takeaway here is just that you are probably going to have to teach this concept to your kids, mm-hmm. right? Because when you think about even back in preschool, it's like everyone gets a glue stick, everyone gets scissors, and oh, she got red and I wanted mm-hmm. green. We have to start teaching our kids, no matter how old they are, if this is a new concept for your family, really making it clear, like, we don't always get the same thing. And mm-hmm. I feel like there's some really good illustrations of this. So for example, if one kid has a cough, right, you're not going to give medicine to every single kid in your family. And if you asked your kids, they'd be like, no, of course not, right? Mm-hmm. If my brother is sick, I don't want to take medicine. Okay, so that's a good example of he's getting what he needs and you don't need that right now. Mm-hmm. And another example might be like everyone in my family is tall, but we might need a different size step stool, right? Or a different size ladder. If I said everyone gets a 1-foot step stool, some kids would be tall enough and some kids might not be able to reach. Mm-hmm. So we would never say that. And when you kind of illustrate that for the kids, a lot of times they will laugh or be like, yeah, that makes no sense, mm-hmm. mom. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of a kind of way you could frame it for them, because when it comes down to things like bedtime, that's a little more subjective. But mm-hmm. when you start to get into the nitty gritty of it, mm-hmm. really most things, we don't all need the exact same amount mm-hmm. of something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say it helps me so much having just a go-to phrase like, fair is not always equal. Everyone mm-hmm. gets what they need. Like my kids, like I said, are so tired of hearing me say that because I say it all the time. So it's still a concept that my kids are learning, even though we've been talking about it for a long time. But the reason that I really like having this kind of go-to phrase to use is that it keeps me out of the argument. As Katie and I were kind of saying towards the beginning, where we want to resolve the issue as quickly as possible and we can get sucked into the problem and make it our problem too. Having just a really standard phrase when this kind of issue comes up keeps me out of what we call the conflict loop in our online course. It mm-hmm. keeps me out of that argument and getting sucked into kind of this back and forth with my kids. So that's one reason that I really love having just a standard phrase that I bring up. I still use it with my kids all the time. Again, they're still learning. I'm thinking about just this last weekend, one of my boys was invited on a play date at a friend's house. And so my other child was like, well, what am I going to do? And I'm like, well, we'll find something fun to do. He's like, well, will you buy me a present since mm-hmm. I don't get to go on a play date? And I was like, excuse me?
Yep. Excuse me. There.
You know, no, I need to rely on my phrase. Fair is not always equal. You know, mm-hmm. he has a play date this weekend. You might have one next weekend, or you could, you know, come to me and ask me kindly, oh, can I see if there's a friend that I can have a play date with? But it was one of these examples where this argument was starting between my boys because one of them was having a play date and the other one wasn't. So it's just one of those situations, again, where it's nice to kind of fall back on that thing that I tell them all the time. Fair yeah. isn't always equal. Yeah.
That brings up a thing that, you know, isn't necessarily directly related to this, but my husband and I have been really working on this idea of decide once instead of every single time your kid asks you, you know, you have to go through the whole decision-making process. And if you have ADHD yourself, you're like, I get it because I'm super empathetic to my kids, but it makes me inconsistent in how mm-hmm. I respond. And so that's kind of a great example of just decide once. Like, we're not, like, my daughter has a lot of dance classes and we kind of have the rule, hey, when you're at dance, life kind of continues in the family. So if there is a birthday party or something going on, we're not all going to stay home because you're at dance. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of decided that one time. And now it's just applying that same rule over and over. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's times you might have, you know, be able to miss dance or whatever. But as a general rule, you know, because right away when she started dance, it was like, what? You guys went to Chipotle without me? How, you know, I need to go to Chipotle. And we're like, no, you have, we got you dinner. It's in the mm-hmm. fridge. But hey, we can't just sit here all week long while you're at mm-hmm. dance. And the same thing goes for my son who plays a lot of sports, like when he's in season or whatever. So I don't know if that's helpful to anyone else, but that has mm-hmm. been a game changer for my family. Just decide once and then you're not making the same decision over and over.
I love that. And that's so important for kids with ADHD who really mm-hmm. need this level of predictability and consistency when it comes to how you're interacting with them. Just deciding once is fair to them. It's mm-hmm. fair. Because otherwise they're going to wonder if maybe this time you're going to change your mind. This time they might get away with it. So I love yeah. that. Decide once. I think that's important. Okay, should we move on to two? Our yeah. second tip? Okay, let's
I
do it.
I think we're ready.
Okay. Okay. So our second tip is to focus on teaching the skills that are underlying the conflict. And I bet if you took the time to think about it, you would notice some patterns in mm-hmm. how your kids are interacting with each other and the type of things that are commonly spawning conflict or disagreement. And underneath that, if you pay attention, the patterns are probably coming back to some lagging EF skills, executive functioning skills. We talk about this all the time, that you see the surface level behavior, which is conflict between siblings, right? Arguing, hitting, screaming, slamming doors. That's the surface level behavior. But when we really say, okay, what is underlying this? What is causing this struggle? A lot of times it's coming back to these executive functioning skills that are delayed for kids with ADHD. So what are some examples of those executive functioning skills? Difficulties with emotion regulation. I mean, this is just a huge one. And you can most of you can probably say that your child goes from 0 to 60 really fast. So there's no in-between area for the sibling to even pick up on, I'm starting to irritate my brother or my sister. Mm-hmm. Delayed executive functioning skills makes it harder to wait. Harder to wait your turn. When you're really excited, you want it to happen right now. It makes it hard to be flexible. So we call this cognitive flexibility. Thinking about how someone else might experience the exact same thing differently from how you're experiencing it. And then also just being flexible when plans change. Right. Can't do what you originally planned to do. Or maybe your sibling said they would play Super Mario Bros. With you this afternoon, but now they actually have to do homework. So just handling that frustration. Impulsivity. I mean, this is probably a huge one that's underlying a lot of sibling conflict, is just mm-hmm. children acting out of impulse towards their sibling without really thinking through, like, is there a more effective way to handle this conflict? What will happen if I do this? So when you really start to think about it, there's so many executive functioning skills underlying sibling conflict.
Yeah, so, I have an example of that yeah. in our family. So something that we've been dealing with a lot is my older one, my 12-year-old, the night owl, will kind of pretty consistently correct her brother about various things. And sometimes it's very valid and appreciated, like, hey, you got to look both ways at the stop sign when you're on your bike, right? But other times it's, why are you mushing up the chips in your chip bag? You know, stop doing that. You know, things that I'm like, really? Does it matter to you in any sense of the word? And then he will get mad and fight back and they'll argue. But again, when you look at it on the surface, you're like, oh, what's the issue? Oh, she's just telling him what to do. Okay, so that's actually a symptom of a bigger need, which, as you mentioned, is like things like impulsivity and being able to have a thought and keep that thought inside and not say it out loud every single time someone is bothering you or mm-hmm. chewing loudly or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like the ability to inhibit, that's a huge executive function that's kind of on the other side of impulsivity, that you can pause and think, is this helpful? Is this kind? I feel like there's little prompts that the schools teach kids, like, mm-hmm. is it helpful, kind, true, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That is inhibition. You have to be able to stop and evaluate what you are about to say. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, you have him who wants to crunch his chips and has this reactivity, like, what? You're going to tell me what? Are you? Do you really think you can tell me not to crunch my chips? And now we have this fight. But the fight really isn't about chips. It's really a deeper thing. And mm-hmm. so when I look at that as a parent, I might want to come in and referee that and be like, okay, here's what we're doing with chips, right? Probably my own reactivity. I'm like, there will be no chips in our house forever. But that's not going to solve it.
You've lost chip privilege. Yeah.
I know. We've lost chip privileges. Except I like chips. So this is about – I hate when the consequence is a punishment for me. So, okay, that's off the table. I love it. But yeah, so to that end, it's like I have to look a little bit deeper and say, okay, but what is the need? Like, what is the issue that's really hard? And then mm-hmm. break that down with my kids and talk mm-hmm. through that. Mm-hmm. And how do you think that makes him feel when you're – constantly sort of, gosh, I hate to say, like, nagging him. Like, you're just, mm-hmm. I don't know. He already has a mom. Okay. And mm-hmm. she's kind of high maintenance over here. So I feel like poor guy has now like two moms. And so, but again, it's that perspective taking, it's the reactivity. Mm-hmm. Hey, when she tells you that and you need help, instead of yelling back, what could you do? And practicing the skill that's beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I feel like it's a long story, but that's a good example maybe of what it actually looks like in your home.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe we can give a few more examples too about how like actually teaching the skill underneath might look. And I also mm-hmm. just want to point out that most of the time teaching the skill underneath the challenge is not happening in the moment. Like this right. is something, this is a conversation. These are practices that we're having separate from like that moment of sibling conflict when emotions are high. So at a time when everyone's calm, we want to think about what skill are we going to try to teach? How can we increase practices to get more opportunities to like really show this skill? And then how do we really make the skill pay out? So like we're trying to change our child's behavior. Like what's the payout for them for interacting differently? Mm-hmm. So we have to notice when they're getting it right. In some cases, you might be setting up a simple reward system for your kids to work towards a goal together for you know, playing a game without, you know, flipping the board off the table.
Yeah.
Or raising voices. So, okay. So let's think through another example. So maybe let's take the board game example. Back when I was in high school, oh my gosh, I had so much patience. I didn't have my own kids yet. I loved nannying. I loved babysitting. I knew that I wanted to work with kids in the future. So just put, you know, that's where I'm coming from here.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see it, by the way. I can picture like 16-year-old Mallory with all the patience.
Yes. And I would babysit this brother and sister, and they loved to play Monopoly. They love to play Monopoly. And as a parent now, I guarantee you the parents were like, save that for when Mallory's here.
Yes. Save,
oh, Mallory will play that with you. Because every time I'd come over, they would always want to play Monopoly. Mm-hmm. And it would always end the same with the daughter flipping the board if, you know, a bad move or she perceived that her brother, you know, taxed her. You know, I actually haven't played Monopoly in a long time for a lot of these reasons.
It's when they put a hotel on Boardwalk. I have unfortunately played it. Yes. And then you land on Boardwalk and they're like, you owe me $1,200. Yes. The board inevitably gets flipped over. The hotel is on the ground. So where do I get a Mallory? Because I think that's the moral of the story.
So I had so much patience to manage this. But now as Mama Mallory, I maybe don't have that same level of patience, but I also have a lot more insight into what's going on and how I might be able to support rather than putting myself repeatedly in this position where the board game ends up getting flipped.
Right.
But maybe we need to practice playing other games first, taking mm-hmm. turns and handling frustration in a smaller way. Like with Monopoly, I feel like everyone's so invested because the game has been going on for 3 hours.
Yep, absolutely.
And losing feels a lot harder in those circumstances because it's such a long game. So how about playing a game that tends to last 5 or 10 minutes? Like we can get a lot of rounds in and everyone can win a couple times and feel good about it. So like how do we set up practices where – like lower stakes opportunities for both kids to lose basically or take turns or practice waiting. So finding lower stakes opportunities to practice some of those skills.
I do think that that is something that parents many of us probably feed into, because when our kids are small, I don't know about you, but I would always let my kids win. Mm-hmm. Like if it was Candyland or Uno or whatever the shorter little kid games, I would let them beat me. And I think that that's sweet and fine. I'm not saying you need to go in and like crush your kid in chess, but it is an opportunity for them to practice losing with in a safe place, like you said. Mm-hmm. So if it is, you know, you're winning, I think of like the game Perfection, where you put all the little pieces in before the thing pops. It's a pretty anxiety producing game, actually. We played it back in the 80s when I was growing up, but I would play against my kids, and I'm very good at Perfection. And that was one where I would kind of beat them. And of course I would beat them by like one or two shapes, but they practice then how to respond. And then when they win, I'm modeling, hey, good game. That was awesome. You did a great job, you know? And so, but again, like you said, when you're with kids playing against kids, they are not going to let your kid win all the time. Mm-hmm. And so everyone wants to win, right? And so I think I love that as a way to, for parents to build up that skill. So maybe it's not even if you have two children or three children who cannot play together without it flipping the board, then it might even be with you or another adult, but not letting them win all the time as a starting point. So it's really getting beneath the surface, like what's the issue that they're having and how can I support and teach that? And yes, exactly what you said, Mel, with rewarding them when they do it well, because that's the other piece is like we want them to recognize this is working and this is more successful.
Yeah, I think sometimes siblings and parents fall into this like, we're interacting, there's conflict. They just fall into this pattern of when we're around each other, we're arguing, we're fighting. You know, anytime we sit down on the couch, it's an argument about who chooses the show first. And we have to kind of break them out of that cycle. We have to help them focus on when things are going well and that things can go well. And they can go into interactions with their siblings like, oh, this can be fun and I enjoy my sibling. And so reward systems in some cases can kind of help break that conflict cycle and shift it to something positive. But we know a lot of you listeners are probably in a place right now where you're like, no, my kids cannot handle being around each other, playing together without there being some kind of conflict, which I know can be really exhausting. And unfortunately, like this isn't just like a fast fix. We're not like, say this and everything will be better. Like it does take some work. You have to be a detective, figure out like kind of what is the missing skill or challenge underneath the argument and how can I give my child more smaller stakes opportunities to practice that and build up to this more difficult situation.
Yeah, I think so many things would be easier if we could just give you a 90-second script and it would solve it. But that's not that realistic. So I think this is, these are skills and they do take time.
Yeah.
So our third suggestion is to keep in mind that you really want to protect your connection with each child. And what do I mean by that? I think a lot of times as parents, we are quick to jump in and be the referee and kind of say, okay, you know what? You were right in this situation. You were wrong. Mm-hmm. You need to stop doing this. You need to do that. And what can happen a lot of times is that can really fuel sibling competition. It can make it feel like, oh, you know, at least I know in my family, like I have a lot more in common naturally with one of my kids. My husband has a lot more in common with the other one. And I might see their perspective more easily, right? But kids pick up on that and they're like, oh, you always favor that kid. And that can feel really hard. Mm-hmm. So keeping in the forefront of your mind, you know, in our online course, Creating Calm, we talk about being the coach, not the referee. So you're not out there blowing the whistle and assigning, you know, calling balls and strikes or whatever. That's not a referee. What is that? An ump? I don't know.
Yeah.
Luckily, the sports analogies are really not my repertoire. But yeah, you know, the goal being that you want to continue to keep that connection at the forefront. So spending some time individually with your kids, and that can be hard to do. So maybe it's just you going in, sitting on the counter while they're brushing their teeth and, you know, chit-chatting about the day and letting them feel heard and seen. And to that extent, where we started this episode is that not every kid needs the same thing. So you may have one kid who really loves to do physical activities with you and one kid that's like, let's just sit here and hang out or let's bake together, whatever it is, but finding a way to connect. And, you know, I'm sure that we've all heard this advice, but validating those feelings. Hey, I saw that you were really trying to help and he didn't react very nicely, and I can see that you're really disappointed. And validating them so that they do hear, my mom or dad gets me. Like, they understand where I'm coming from. That doesn't mean that you're like, yes, you can totally hit your brother. You're just validating their experience to say, I see why that was frustrating. And one last thing to keep in mind is really being intentional about noticing when our kids are doing the right thing. So those moments when they don't just get themselves a drink and set it on the table for dinner, but they grab a cup for their brother and sister and get that out on the table too. And noticing that and being like, hey, that was cool. Thank you for thinking of them. Thank you for being helpful. So often I think we are focused on the conflict or the negative moment because we're needed in that moment. But if we can just be intentional to find those little glimmers, those positive things, that can be such a great piece of it too, to help our kids really feel like they're seen and like we recognize them. We all love to feel recognized for what we're doing. And that's a really important part for our kids too.
Yeah. I mean, what we attend to is what's going to grow and keep happening. So the more that we're attending to those moments where they are being thoughtful, they're paying attention to their siblings' likes and dislikes, they're holding the door, you know, those kind of things, extending the olive branch. The more we notice those and point it out, the more we're going to see those things happen. So it can feel really hard to notice those things when it feels like everything is conflict and a struggle, but it is 100% worth your time and noticing to start paying attention to those. So to wrap up here, our last reminder, as we said, sibling conflict is totally normal. How we respond to the sibling conflict makes a big difference. We also have to share our calm with our kids right in the moment. But our key takeaway today is that with these small changes, they can really add up over time. Teach your kids how to handle conflict in a calm and respectful way. And as always, we're here to support you.
Thanks for listening to Shining with ADHD by your hosts, Lori, Katie, and Mallory of the Childhood Collective.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and hit subscribe so you can be the first to know when a new episode airs.
If you are looking for links and resources mentioned in this episode, you can always find those in the show notes. See you next time.